Right, I'll reconvene the hearing. And we have Mr. Hunt.
Thank you. You all have, I do have it, yeah.
Yes.
My name is Gregory Hunt. I am the CEO and one of two directors of Gippsland Valley Station. My professional background and experience is detailed in my evidence in chief, dated 12th of June 2017. This summary sets out the key points within my evidence in chief. I have also read the rebuttal evidence of Dr. Reed and Mr. Robert Luxton, among others, on behalf of the council, and I have responded to your comments. The district is a very different place today from that in 2008 when the consent for the original resort was granted. In 2017, the economic and social conditions, wording's a little strange, were different. It was therefore logical for us to reassess what we had consented in 2008 and look at it with fresh eyes, given our current situation and also the wider social and economic conditions of the district. We, it's the royal we, I have spent the last 9 years concentrating on the winery and wine production. We have continued to develop the commercial base of Gippsland Valley Winery. This includes a new winemaking facility, an administration office, and enhancements to the tourism activities on offer. We have recognised that the logical place for any further commercial development, including accommodation and associated activities, are better located in proximity to the winery cluster and in the general area where we have resource consent approval. With the proposed underpass being completed by the end of next year, and I'll just preface that, I'm trying to have it done by this coming summer. Just depends if I can get a contractor. There will be a pedestrian, cycle and vehicular link between the winery and the proposed visitor accommodation on the north side of the state highway. With the recognition that visitor accommodation and tourism activities are better centralised in this area, it was also recognised that the Vickers Village was the logical hub for residents in Gippsland. This was also the intent and what we promised to the local community in our 2008 consent. In regard to viticulture, we have also recognised that there is an opportunity for further planting of vines on Gippsland Valley Station that were not deemed logical in 2008. Alan Brady, in support of our original application, was in support. Alan was the original founder of the Gippsland Valley Winery and a pioneer in the planting of vines in Gippsland and the wine industry in Central Otago. At the hearing for our original consent, he noted the main objective in developing the Gippsland Character Zone was to protect the valley from lifestyle residential development, reverse sensitivity pressures, and to preserve the resource for viticulture. He felt that the comprehensive approach we were taking was appropriate, and by creating clusters of development, we were avoiding the pressures of reverse sensitivity while at the same time preserving the land resource for viticulture. I am confident that with the plan now in front of you, we are still adhering to the primary objectives of the Gippsland Character Zone. The zoning will provide Gippsland Valley Station more certainty in the longer term. It also means that development can be undertaken in stages and further refined under a more controlled consenting process that has rules tailor-made for the land. Coupled with accommodation, residential and commercial development, that will enable further viticulture and horticultural growth. Of equal importance is that if we are granted the changes through the zoning process, we can provide more certainty, not only for ourselves, but the local Gippsland community. I am pleased to see that Dr. Reed has put forward her landscape support for the amended proposal. Working with the consultant team, we have tried to provide as much certainty as possible in regard to site coverage within the activity areas and also where productive landscape plantings are appropriate. of equal importance is protecting the ability within the activity areas for flexibility based on market demand. There is a balance, but given that we are providing strict controls in regard to height, building size and coverage, this should provide certainty. With the controls that we have put in place in conjunction with the landscape mitigation, I am confident we will not only create a pleasant experience for our visitors and our owners, but also protect the visual amenity when travelling on State Highway 6. After reading the comments of Mr. Buxton, I can't help but feel that this proposal is being scrutinised like it is a resource consent application. It was important to me that the underlying Gibson character zone was retained. Mr. Giddens and I spent a considerable amount of time evaluating different zoning options, and the clear path was to alter the current zone to ensure that the key principles of the Gibson character zone can be upheld. With regard to the densities of development and site coverage again, I spent a lot of time with my team going over this. Mr. Buxton takes some issue with residential development in Gibson. It must be recognised that we are creating a resort which has a mix of visitor accommodation and residential accommodation, as well as accommodation for staff. The Gibson economy is growing, and at the moment is largely serviced from outside of the community as far afield as Cromwell. By providing staff accommodation, we can not only meet our requirements, but also provide an answer, or at least partially, for the wider Gibson staffing requirements. A resort to be successful and vibrant is a mix of visitors who stay at the resort, residents of the resort, and locals. What we are proposing at the resort is completely different to a residential subdivision. I thank the council for the opportunity to consider this proposal and feel strongly that this will provide social and economic benefits at a local and wider level, better suited to 2017 and the future.
You heard the discussion this morning about commercial activities in the AA3 and the
AA4,
whatever it was. Sorry, I'm number dyslexic. And the thoughts that as the package stands, it could be anything. I mean, whether it be a supermarket or a data centre or an office block. Or have you got a view on whether that should be more limited than it's currently proposed?
Oh, absolutely. The original consent, when we had the visitor accommodation around it, we had activities such as a spa, a gymnasium, things that you would get in a resort setting for visitors. Those activities will now occur down in the visitor accommodation area. My whole intent, and as I committed to the local Gibson community, was that it would become a gathering point, not only for the locals, but for the visitors. And that includes the concept of putting in a cellar door for all of the small hop winery producers in Gibson who don't have a cellar door, as an experience. Also, you know, this whole paddock to play is something we are going to do, and I will commit to that. That's a question coming in regard to the planting. But it's okay to put these things in. I want to put in there, you know, a farmer's market, a produce area, you know, where the goods can be sold that not only we produce, but the local community produces. And this isn't some esoteric, nice-sounding thing. It's actually something that our visitors and our guests enjoy, and they get to participate. And it brings the locals in there, and it's that mixing of local and visitor that makes, you know, makes resorts work. So I'm all in favour of making of them being viticulture or horticultural related activities. you know, which obviously includes things like, now, I may shoot myself in the foot because there's one thing I would like to put in, but things like cafes, you know, a restaurant, you know, artisan shops, because they add a richness to it. And one thing I would, and I have considered very carefully, is I would like to consider putting in a daycare there. Because, again, as part of the community, not only for our neighbours, but also our staff and also our guests if they want to go skiing for the day. So that's probably outside the bound of it, but to me, that's something that would work well within that facility. We have no intent of putting in a service station or a data centre or a supermarket. I do want to put in a cafe where they can come in and get the paper or the bottle of the milk or, you know, the can of baked beans, you know, those sorts of things for the locals, because I want the locals coming in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think we've heard you say you're happy to commit to the planting of the grapes before the initial grapes.
And I'd like to just expand on that a little bit. You know, I in a sense am a developer. You know, that comes with a lot of negative connotations sometimes, and how do we have certainty? And you'll hear from developers that, well, we're going to put in that mounding, or we're going to put in those trees so that you can't see something. I actually take that as a benefit if that's how it's seen by council in regard to mitigation of views. To me, I need to put in the vineyards because within 2 years, we need the rosé, we need the bubbles. So I need it from an economic perspective, but also equally important, you know, you've seen how the concept behind the development is a paddock to plate. And so they are integral to create a setting for our guests. You know, the trees growing and the fruit growing on them, or the truffle inoculated oats. You know, these things I want to be in place so that when we have guests coming, they're not a metre high. You know, they are actually growing to a height. Or the vineyards, I need those in place not only for economic, but also for the culinary and enology school that we want to have. So that they're integral to what we want to do.
So is this built into the zone, into the rules package yet?
You'd have to ask Brett. I've said I will. You know, we want to do it. So whether it's in there or not,
So you talk about the wine school and the like. That will be deemed under another building. Mm. So in terms of the coverage that's provided for, again, that would also fall under commercial activity, ancillary to the winery, a bit of cultural activity, as I've said.
But I'm sorry, I'm talking, building's one thing, I'm talking about the plantings.
Yes, we're talking about these plantings, which are going to go ahead first. How's that covered off in the rule?
Well, no, that's one of the comments I first made, and that would be something I think that would be actually beneficial to put into a rule package, that the planting occurs first, and think about over the lunch, whether that's required as part of the structure plan, perhaps, or as part of the rule framework. What's the appropriate thought to that?
We're not enthusiastic about writing those provisions for you.
Are you offering to write them, Mr. Gibbons?
Yes, I am offering.
You've got till Friday then.
I'll make sure he does it.
Just explain the Vintners Village a bit more to me. I haven't really developed a proper understanding of what that is.
As I said, the Vintners... I'll take a step back. When we first, the original consent, we looked at doing that, we were told that we should have a resort that is elitist, that only you were staying there, you could go in there. I was absolutely you know, that we didn't go with that architect out of Auckland. Because to me, my experience is that a resort to be successful, as I've said, is, you know, where people mix and they mingle. And not only, and also, you know, this ties in with the concept of the cluster development. To me, I consider those small neighbourhoods that are set in the setting of Central Otago, and you get to know your neighbours, you can, and this is what happens in these developments. But then you also go down to the Vintners Village, and that's where you can go down for a coffee, or you go down and you visit the artisan stands that are there, or the farmers market, or, you know, there'll be activities going on. And we intend that this is, just from a management point of view, when people own a property here, the intent is that they are buying basically the footprint of where their residence goes or their house goes. Outside of that, we will retain ownership, including the Vintners Village, because it's up to us to make sure it works, and it's, you know, that would include the Vintners Village, where we would be putting on events and activities. So, the time, you know, when I first started looking at this, and this is back in 2006, a commercial hub or a strip development, you know, not particularly romantic sounding. In the States, there is a couple of developments that have, and I came across this term, Vintners Village. And what they are is a winery development or a resort, which is what this is. You have a cluster of activities that is, and this one they called it a Vintners Village. And I thought, yeah, that's appropriate for what we want to do.
I have a relevant question to Mr. Hunt. There's a part of your evidence in Chief that talks about an organic approach.
Yeah.
Now, why I'm asking is because you might remember on our site visit, I asked about the golf course. I haven't quite figured out how the golf course fits in this package. And I know you're wanting to keep that option open, but I think I knew this morning it might also be needed as an area of land for disposal fields. So, what, you know, golf courses are not organic.
No, could you see me wanting to jump up and answer when the consultants were there?
Yes, yeah. I've given you an opportunity now. Say what you like.
First of all, the golf course, initially it was an 18-hole course, and that's what resorts had. You know, and even in saying that, though, the golf course even... No, there's no point going back there. This one, at most, would be, if we do it, would be a 9-hole course. Now, it's a Greg Turner would be involved, I'm sure, as a golf course architect if we do it. They're what's called a Lynx-style Central Otago course. Mm-hmm. So the roughs brown off. They just follow a natural course, you know, and the greens, not only the roughs, but the fairways as well. So the only area that remains green year-round is the tee area and the green. That's it. Everything else changes with the seasons, and that's what a Lynx style of course is. And so that's, you know, that's what we would be doing with this. Now, in regard to, are we going to do a golf course? Perception of golf course, you know, I was involved with Millbrook. I didn't design it. The, you know, the golf course. That's exactly the opposite of what we're doing in regard to that, the mechanism for the maintenance and everything is what you're talking about. Our golf course is a little golf course that's set in its setting, that's green in the summer, browns off in the winter. You know, it's part of the landscape. Minimal earthworks would occur with it. The Matagowrie clusters, the rock clusters will become the natural hazards. You know, we don't put in bunkers and all those sorts of things. It's the closest thing would be, you know, if you looked at Arrowtown in regard to style, or there's one in Terrace. You know, those styles of golf courses, that's what we're thinking of. If we do it. Me, you know, and the next question I may lead on to it, if you're going to ask me, was in regard to the concert site.
Might finish with the golf course.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Because it's relevant to the landscape assessment.
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So that's helpful. And you're a landscape architect yourself, so you've given some thought to that. And it's also relevant to water usage. And I'm assuming, because you've got a consent for this, have you got a consent for
We have two water sources that we had consented in 2008. Yeah. We have Tom's Creek, which is runs up from the Remarkables. That, in theory, is sufficient for all of the water requirements we needed for the original consent. Now, that's on, you know, in an average take. But we also got consented a take out of Kawara, and that provides us with as much water to top up as we need. So that was how we were dealing with the water.
Right. Now the next question you're going to go on to.
Oh, yeah. So anyway, so the crossover is people, the first of all, the concert for us now is very important. You know, hell, this year it's sold out in 7 days. You know, 18,000 people. So it would be silly to throw that away, you know, without careful consideration. The reason we got in the concert business was for branding, you know, for people to know our brand, to enjoy a great day. When they go to the restaurant, they go, oh, remember that great day, and we have a bottle of instant wine. That was the theory behind it. We never expected them to go as well and to be as successful as they have. So, but along with the concert and people coming and having a great time, you need car parking. Now, if you look at where we currently do car parking, that is going to be in, that's all of the vineyard area on the south side of the state highway. I can't put cars there. So what I'm wanting to do is, on a golf course, or in an open space area, you know, that would be, for one day a year, was where the cars would go, and we've got the underpass approved, you know, from the north to the south side, which is safer than the way they do at the moment, where they put a barrier across and close the state highway down and everybody walks across. Well, we'll have the underpass, so people will park there, will come through the underpass, and this ties in with that question with the Vintners Village. Vintners Village, there's no conflict between that and the concert. We would have the Vintners Village, and people would walk through the Vintners Village. They can use that, and they'd go into the concert site. End of the concert, they'd go under the underpass and go back to their car and go on their way. So that's the tie-in with what may be golf course area, or it may remain as open space. And the concert site, at the moment, yes, it's shown as part of AA3. But that's a commercial decision we'll make. You know, if we... Order of development is, that would be the last area, if ever, we do develop it. But we may. At the same time, you know, we're looking and considering other sites for the concert. You know, so I just, at the moment, in answer to the question, right now, yes, the concerts will continue. In the future, well, maybe they won't, or we may move them somewhere else.
I did want to ask you, and this is again for my education, not because it's material, planting of the grapes that will let you do the sparkling wines and the rosé, what proportion of the grapes that you'll need for production will be supplied from this area?
Well,
we can
I haven't put numbers on this plant here.
Yeah.
Nobody else had done it, so I got my surveyor to do it last night. The area to the west, that large block of PL,
yes,
that will all be Pinot Noir grapes. Now, the Pinot Noir grapes, the reason they can grow there now is because it's a shorter growing season. And in theory, we don't actually need windmills there, which comes with that reserve sensitivity, because the frost issue is in the spring. And you can water spray, you know. Your problem with it is in the autumn when you put the nets on and you obviously can't do water spray, but by the time you have frosts in the autumn, we've picked those grapes. So I'm fairly confident we'll be using water, and that whole area there is 6.488 hectares, and that will all be Pinot. In addition, the area that is on in front of AA3, I won't get break all down to you. The 16 hectares of grapes, they will all be Pinot. Because we're a Pinot house. And our growing demand, hell, I'll give away my politics here. We sponsored the national the gala dinner. And the guy said, well, do you have any bubbles that you can give on arrival? And I said, yeah, sure, of course I do. And then I was told we'd run out of the non-vintage, so I had to provide the reserve for that thing. But What I'm saying is that our demand is growing every year for our rosé, and we do our business model on a five-year program, and so I know that I need all of this area for Pinot Noir, and the Pinot Noir is the basis for the non-vintage and also for the rosé.
But you'll still be buying in Pinot Noir from other sources for those?
No, we don't buy any other. It's all our own grapes.
I'm just trying to understand whether the grapes are part of the resort as a front of house, you know, lipstick on a pig thing, or whether they're the real thing.
Oh, no, they're the real thing. I'll tell you, for me, I told our winemakers all that area in front of AA2 we're going to do as vines. Yeah. And then that area in the middle there by the golf course, we're going to do those as vines as well. I got shut down in flames by our winemakers because they said, one, it's too cold, and two, they're not productive. The runs are too short for the vines, and it's not economic to do them there. So, yeah, it's fine. So my winemakers, I think Sasha was a little disappointed she didn't get asked. We're putting the grapes in areas where they're ideal for grapes, with the sun angle and aspect, and also the size of the blocks there, which tied in with what I wanted for the other areas, you know, for the orchard plantings in front of the AA2 area and in the middle area.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. And the next area, actually, where I am looking at putting grapes, and I think somebody asked, one of the commissioners asked the question about the upper plateau, which isn't part of this application, but that will be the next area that will do grapes on the top there. Hopefully, the demand keeps increasing, which comes back to something that the commissioner asked in regard to how do we have certainty these grapes will remain. Well, the fact is the viticulture industry in New Zealand is going from strength to strength. And Central Otago now is ranked as the second, but best Pinot growing region in the world, and the demand is right up there. So I have no doubt that you would never pull, the only reason you never pull grapes out is because some varietals go out of fashion. But Pinot Noir will not go out of fashion. And we're a 0.2% player on the world stage, but we're at the top end of that market. So I think on the upper plateau, that'll be our next area that we'll be planting demo.
Mr. Chair, one last one.
Yes.
There are a lot of consents not implemented.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what I wanted to know is if this proposed subzone is not recommended favourably, and you end up having to implement your 2008 consent to others, which bits would you do and when?
Well, I'd be paying consultants a lot of money, which I don't want to do, because I don't want to implement that now. You know, what I've said, you look back to 2008, the Ladies Mile was Ladies Mile. There was nothing happening there. Now look what's being considered there. Look at Arrowtown and the boundaries there. You know, the world, the local area is a different place. The airport, you know, there was no international flights. The fact is, there is demand for visitor accommodation and different experiences. And with what we've done at the winery now, it is just so logical for us to put all of those activities in that area there, you know, because they tie in. Then you said about organic. It's not a story, a made-up story. We have a working winery there. And then if I tie in the idea of the culinary school, which ties in with the story we've got with the winery as well, with food, it's just logical that now, as opposed to 2007, where it was more a question, is that winery going to go into receivership, or are we going to try and turn it around? Well, we turned it around, and now it's to a point where we want to expand on those opportunities. And then, so if I put the visitor there, also, the whole concept of the resort, and if you go to places where you stay in your hotel room and you go, what the hell am I going to do now? It just makes more sense when I say visit residential down around the Vintners Village, I have a fairly strong view that though we will get a lot of people who buy there, and they will maybe stay there two or three times a year for a month or 2 months at a time. That's not overseas, that's Auckland, because that's our main market. And we are putting in place, and we always intended it, a management structure where we will be a concierge. Those people come down, we have the place ready, they stay there, and when they're not there, it comes back to us, and we'll let it on their behalf, you know. And so that's why that area down there is more logical for that activity. Mm-hmm. And there will be some people, you know, when I was at Millbrook, we had maybe 10% of the people live there year-round, and the rest were the structure I just talked about. And then with the Vintners Village, it's like you're staying there, or even if you're living there, how you get bored sitting in your house, you know, to be able to walk over to the Vintners Village and mix with people is the whole intent behind it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, I have no further questions.
I may add a couple more. There was one thing about the stone wall and the hedge. I think it's important to note also that that's only opposite the winery, and you know, we already have a stone wall there, so it's that sense of arrival, do they tie together? And well, the reason I want to do the hedging behind it, again, it's not because I want to block views, but that is a state highway. And by having a softening of hedge behind it, that actually buffers and breaks the sound, you know, muffles the sound for, one, the winery, which we're getting ready to do, but also on the AA2 area. And the only other area of stone walling is right in front of the Vintners Village. For the same reason. One, to sense of arrival, there's something different here, but also for the buffering of sound. Another thing I'd just like to give, certainly to the commissioners, and it was raised by Commissioner Crawford, was just, you know, the ecological and heritage sites. You know, I work closely with Peter Petchy, the archaeologist, and with Dawn Palmer, and we identify a lot of areas there because it is an old mining heritage area, and we allow the Gibson Trail to come onto the land. To be able to go through these areas because we saw a great benefit, not only to the public, but also, you know, again, it'd be silly just to claim that. The fact is, those sorts of attractions were built in as attractions for our guests to come and enjoy and see and experience as well. And also believe it's correct, you know, to protect those areas. But there's a great story that goes with them. Oh, sorry, yeah, the Crown Range. I travel over that. I have travelled over it. I was talking about with Commissioner Nugent just before. I moved back here and I started at Millbrook and I thought, great, I'm never going to have to commute again because I've been in LA before that. Well, then I got offered a job in Wanaka, so that was back in 99, I think. I travelled over the Crown Range while it was being sealed. No, before it was sealed, while it was being sealed. And then I finally gave in and I moved to Wanaka, and then what happens, I come back the other way. So I travelled that for 17 years. And also, there's only, now, you know, I can always be corrected, but I look and I've stopped to take photos of our land. And in particular, you know, when on concert day, I do stop at that one little pullout from the top and you come round and you wind down, and just before that spot where all of the tourists stop, there's a spot there where you can look down and you can see the concert site. But I have never been able to see the winery from anywhere. And if I can't see the winery, I can't see AA2.
Thank you, sir. That essentially wraps up what we wanted to present to you today.
Okay.
You've given Mr. Gittins some homework, which I know he's grateful for. But we will get that material to you by Friday. It does raise one issue that was in our minds some weeks ago as to whether there would be a benefit in experts saying planning and landscape getting together, whether that would still have some value if I can be so presumptuous as to imagine that this might get approval from the panel. There may be some benefit in the refining of not only the matters that Mr. Giddens is going to address, but maybe other things that have come up in the hearing today. It's simply a suggestion for your consideration.
In several procedural minutes, I've encouraged planning witnesses in particular, and also landscape architects, both submitters and the council, to talk to each other.
Yes.
And I don't resile from that.
I've read that indication, sir. We've got that very much in mind. We did think about it preparatory to coming to see you, but time got away on us a little bit with other professional engagements, but it's encouraging to know that that's still very much the position. Thank you.
Yes.
So in that case, that's all we would like to present to you today, unless you've got anything further.
No. That's fine, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Provided a brief summary of my evidence that was submitted at 323, which is Close Wind Station, and Mr. A. Smith and Mr. Jed Forrest. If I can begin at paragraph 1, the proposed district plan includes significant natural area A323A, which extends over rural living allotments, which are outlined in Appendix 2 of my primary evidence, and reproduced in Appendix A of this evidence for reference. The allotments afford residential development rights, which are set out in resource consents contained in Appendix 1 of my primary evidence. My primary evidence recommends that the boundary of the SNA is removed from these allotments, as I believe the continued rural living on these allotments, which enables the removal of native vegetation, appears to be at odds with the intention and management of the SNA. QLDC ecologist Mr. Glenn Davis filed rebuttal evidence on the 7th of July 2017 in relation to submission 323, supporting the request to amend the boundary of the SNA to the perimeter of the lots identified in Appendix 1 of my primary evidence. Mr. Davis lends his support on the basis the submission area is on the eastern boundary of the SNA that will not undermine the contiguous nature of the regenerating shrubland, and the area of the amendment by comparison to that of the SNA in its entirety is limited. Mr. Davis' support is not for the reasons outlined in my primary evidence, his conclusions are accepted, along with the amended SNA boundary provided in attachment A to this evidence and reproduced in attachment B. I have got attachment A of his evidence and reproduced in attachment B of my evidence. QLDC planner Ms. Kim Banks filed rebuttal evidence on the 7th of July 2017 supporting submission 323 on the basis of Mr. Davis's evidence. Again, while the reasons outlined in her evidence are not those contained in my evidence, her support of the submission is accepted. I must add that I ask for 10 minutes of your time, sir, at a time when the rebuttal evidence wasn't actually in support of what I was seeking, so
I
thought I might have had somewhat more of an uphill battle today than as it turns out, but I thought if I could just summarise the proceedings at least for the to and fro.
And we can put it even succincter and say this is one of those rare occasions when everyone agrees.
Excellent.
Any commissioner have any questions on this?
No.
No. Thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you. Am I last on the list today? Or?
No. Mr. Farrell, I think.
So he doesn't have far to walk.
Yes. He'll adjourn until he arrives.